Today, Laura Henrica, CEO of the Julius Baer Foundation, meets Dheer Jingaran, the founder director of Language and Learning Foundation in India, with vast experience in developing educational programs throughout Asia and Africa, reflects on today's education inequality and how education is pivotal in mitigating wealth inequality.
Hello, everybody. My name is Laura Henrica. I'm the CEO of the Julius Baer Foundation, and I'm happy to welcome Dheer Jingaran directly from New Delhi in India as my guest today to talk about what role education plays when it comes to wealth inequality. Dheer has been an education professional in India for over 30 years. He has vast experience in developing and implementing education programs, improving quality of education and early literacy throughout all of South and Southeast Asia and Africa. He has worked together with governments, with NGOs, has been an advisor to various organizations, including the Asian Development Bank and UNICEF. He's very familiar with the complex education projects in multicultural settings, designing and developing strategic visions and building program teams around the world. In 2015, he founded the Language and Learning Foundation and has served as its executive director ever since. Over the past 8 years, the organization has impacted 2 million children and improved the classroom practices of 200,000 teachers in public schools across 8 states in India. And we're delighted that since 2023, Dheer has been advising the Julius Baer Foundation on our education projects. Dheer, thank you for being here. And it's wonderful to have this discussion with you today to dig a little deeper into why education is so vital when it comes to mitigating wealth inequality.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for your generous words of introduction. I'm really happy to be interacting with you today on this important issue of wealth and educational inequality. Thank you.
It's our pleasure. So let's start off with a really easy question, a small one. What is the state of education inequality in the world today? With all the educational efforts that we hear about of governments, of NGOs over the past decades, where does that leave us today?
There is actually a lot of inequality, in fact, shocking, I would say, in learning outcomes across the world. While 9 out of 10 children in high-income countries can read by age 10, 10 children in low-income countries cannot read. The World Bank has called this learning poverty, sort of analogous to income poverty. For India, this is about 6 out of 10 children who are learning poor and cannot read. So while there have been a lot of efforts of NGOs and governments, these inequalities have persisted not just across countries, also across regions within countries, across schools and different social groups. So that's where we are today.
So still much work to be done. And despite so many efforts, a very complex issue to address. And that brings me to you. Tell me about your journey. Why did you choose education? And why is education and creating equal education opportunities so important to you personally?
Yeah, good question. I was a career civil servant with the government in India for about 25 years. Since the beginning of my career, I was deeply attracted to school education, especially primary education. In the earlier years of my career, I remember I used to go and visit schools, sit in classrooms, and I was appalled when I saw that children were mostly passive or engaged in mechanical activities. They were mostly copying from the blackboard or the textbook, chorally repeating or rote memorizing. And in many cases, the children did not even understand the language that was being used in the classroom for instruction. So children from these more marginalized backgrounds, for example, lower income households, parents were migrating, those who belonged to some disadvantaged social groups, had really low learning levels. And therefore, I, at that point, became really convinced that this is what I would be doing in the future. And as I grew senior in the civil service, I continued to be in the education sector until at one point I could not do that anymore because ours is a generalist civil service. And then I decided to quit and establish the organization that you mentioned, the Language and Learning Foundation.
And as you started to allude to already, you know, there are so many education projects in the philanthropy space, so many topics that need to be addressed, and education is probably one of the most popular topics for people to engage in. And if you look at the education space itself, because it's very large, you know, what is a topic that you think needs to be explored and funded more today?
Right. So, according to me, the issue of learning equity, that's something that needs to be researched and funded much more than it is today. How are children doing at the bottom of the learning pyramid? And how can they make high gains in learning? And what strategies can we use to ensure that there is an inclusive learning environment in the classroom? And these are not just pedagogical strategies. They're also related to beliefs and attitudes of teachers and the education system about inclusion of children from such marginalized groups. So that's a broad theme of learning equity and all children are learning. Within that, I'd like to highlight one aspect which is really crucial, which is to support children who come from a background of language at home, which is very different from the language of instruction used at school. And these children face a huge language disadvantage or learning disadvantage. So it's very important that we support such children to build a strong foundation of the language that they know best, and then, of course, learn other languages and through these languages learn these subjects very well. There's not too much work happening there in this area. And I think this is an area that needs to be researched and funded much more.
Thank you. And you earlier started drawing some parallels between education inequity and also wealth inequality. Could you expand a little bit on that? What role does education play when we're talking about wealth inequality, which itself is also a very multi-layered and complex issue?
Yeah. I don't think I'll be able to fully address this issue, but a few thoughts around this. I think education, or the lack of it, is one of the primary factors linked to income or wealth inequality. There are many studies that have shown that the earning gap between those with a bachelor's degree or a higher degree and those with just a high school background, that income gap has been widening. It's also been said very clearly that education is the most powerful weapon to fight poverty. One of the studies points out that if children left schools with basic reading skills, 170 million people could be lifted out of poverty. Wow, there's another recent estimate that shows that one extra year of school increases income by 10% overall and 20% for women. So really clear estimates how education plays a big role in promoting income and wealth equality in a way. I'll just add one more here. We know that girls' education is important for a variety of reasons. You know, societal benefits for reducing maternal mortality, nutrition and health, delaying marriage, etc. But one of the most important impacts of girls' education is to increase women's labor participation. And that contributes to reducing wealth and income inequality. Of course, all this means that the quality of education should be good to be able to contribute to this. And it should include, employability and vocational skills that would then help youth, let's say, to be able to do well in their work careers after school. And that education, therefore, can play a huge role in reducing income and wealth inequality.
So really a true springboard, if you will, towards all of these other enablers of income generation and further social mobility. You had sort of alluded to also what children are learning in classrooms. You know, it doesn't seem that it's only about getting access to schools and only about the education that children are getting in the classroom. For children to pursue their studies, often families need support in many different ways. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what you've seen?
Yeah. While it's true that the school plays a very major role in delivering high-quality education, but the support from parents and families is absolutely important to ensure that, you know, they get an enabling environment, not just at home, but get supported to get the best out of education at school. Many interventions in school education, in education, governments, as well as NGOs that focus on improving the quality of education neglect this dimension of parental engagement in children's learning. And this aspect really needs to be strengthened because parents can strongly contribute to their children's learning. Also, I think it's important to remember that education is not just about academic subjects. And it's important to look at education more holistically, which the Julius Baer Foundation has set out to do. There, you know, it's not just about doing well in language and math, but socio-emotional learning, physical development, art, crafts, and music, so all these domains of learning. And it's important to remember that it's these holistic solutions that you know, will help a child realize their full potential, and the aspect of ensuring that parents and communities are strongly connected to school and contribute to their children's learning.
Can you name one or two elements within such holistic approaches that have proven very pivotal to improve children's education? Maybe a couple of examples.
Yes. Let me focus on parent engagement for children's learning. And within that, what seems to have worked in a few programs that I have seen. A strategy that encourages parents to provide a dedicated time and space for their children to study at home, even if it's a deprived situation. Just saying that now no one's going to disturb you. This is the place where you can sit and work. Girl children are not required at that point to be helping in chores at home, but this is your time for studies. Also, encouraging parents to ask their children every day about what they learned at school, and sort of show their workbooks or notebooks to their parents, even if the parents have limited education themselves. But this seems to have really been very useful in supporting their children's education. So these are the two examples I've seen.
It resonates a lot with the questions I ask my children at the end of the day when they come home. Yeah. They're not always as forthcoming with the information, I have to say.
Yeah, true.
And in your foundation, in the Language and Learning Foundation, you've achieved some incredible results. And you've achieved what many strive for. You're creating systemic change within the educational system in India. And considering all these complexities we've just touched on, how did you manage to achieve such results with your foundation?
Yeah, I think many things, but let me just talk about two. The first, I think our core founding belief was this and continues to be that we need to work in collaboration with the public education system if we have to achieve impact at scale. We can't do so many things ourselves. So that's been a founding belief, and it's helped us work with the government to be able to strengthen the government's work itself. The second, we've worked on comprehensive solutions for improving the quality of education. Just to give you an example, we say that we have got a three-pronged strategy of working in primary education. The first pillar is continuous professional development for teachers, teacher educators, administrators, and all those in the education ecosystem. The second is high-quality demonstration projects where we can support the government itself to implement high-quality programs effectively and efficiently and see that within 2 or 3 years, there's an improvement in children's learning. So that demonstration programs build a lot of conviction that learning can be improved and foundational programs can do well within the government. And the third pillar of our work is strengthening the system. So we very consciously work on several aspects of helping the system with simple reforms while improving the quality of the inputs that are provided throughout the system. So this comprehensive approach seems to have worked in achieving success at scale for us.
That question of proof, as you stated, you know, this demonstration effect, really, that you can provide for the government is very powerful. And I think a lot of funders are looking for that before they decide to invest in a project, or afterwards. They're keen to be able to show, look, this works. And from those demonstration projects, would you have examples of children successfully moving upwards, socially mobile, thanks to such a holistic educational effort?
Laura, I think we've not been great at tracking the kids after they've passed out of primary education to see how they've done later. But within the 5 years of primary education in India, it's really heartwarming when I see, let's say, when I go to the field and visit schools, a child from a remote indigenous marginalized community in grade three, when she's able to read the newspaper and read it out to her parents, and the kind of admiration and, you know, love that you see around, that the child is then able to, you know, have the community sitting around and read the newspaper, that's so satisfying. So we've seen kids who've learned to read fluently with comprehension, read newspapers, and then again do in grade five. But I think, as you were saying, it's important to track them later and see how they've done in later years in school and later in life. We want to add that dimension to our work.
Yeah, so it's a dimension that just simply requires time as well, right? And tracking is not an easy thing to do, but fantastic when you can see the direct impact like that of the improved learning outcomes of these young kids, like you were saying. It's fantastic. But so that's a positive. And could you tell me maybe an example of something in your time and your experience in this space that maybe where something has failed, where an approach has not worked? Often, it's not necessarily a negative, right? Failure is also often a part of reaching success. It's an important part of learning, and sometimes also important to share what works and what doesn't work with the rest of the sector. What has been a really valuable takeaway for you, because it did not work the way you anticipated?
Yeah, Laura, I agree that we don't often share failures, and there's so much to learn from them. I remember this one time when I was leading a big government program for universal quality of primary education. And we were really excited that we developed a rather intricate design for teaching and learning with materials and the pedagogy. And the demand was that teachers work with multiple groups with different learning levels with differentiated strategies and materials.
Sounds complicated.
Complicated, yes, exactly. We designed it so well on the, you know, in our workshops. And when it was taken to the field, you know, teachers were actually in multi-grade classrooms. They were teaching two or three grades together. They found using these materials burdensome. And it was a great learning for us that, you know, you should always design keeping the local context in mind, study it well. This was, of course, very early years in my work in education. And also the second thing was a lot of prior dialogue and consultation is required before anything new is attempted to be implemented. Because it's the teachers who are central to what happens at the classroom. And before we impose a new strategy or newer practices, it's important that we consult them and also design for scale rather than design for a small model kind of approach.
Yeah, and especially when we see how many children in India alone would benefit from improved learning outcomes, scale is such a critical topic as well.
And right.
You've come aboard as the advisor in education for the Julius Baer Foundation just a few months ago, focused on education inequality. And what are your first takeaways from your time with the foundation?
Okay. It's been only a few months, but what I found is that the board as well as the foundation team, they adopt a reflective approach and they think strategically about their investment and programs on education as well as wealth inequality. I found the discussions with the team as well as during the board meetings, both online and in person, they're quite stimulating, and everyone has an opportunity to express their opinion. It's not that people hesitate to say what they have to say because they think this may not be what others want. So I think that's refreshing.
Well, thank you. That's very complimentary of you. I think we do try to be a learning organization ourselves, where there's a, as you said, a constant need to think about local context, to consult and engage in dialogue, and also, of course, to be open to what are the new projects we need to be focusing on. Some of which sounds similar to some of the work that you've been doing as well. And if you think of the Julius Baer Foundations, what are its strengths, do you think, in addressing education inequality in particular?
Yeah, from what I've seen and discussed, I feel that the foundation is focused on a few specific dimensions within the education sector. As you said earlier, education sector is so wide. So I think the foundation has benefited from a good approach of being rather specific in what they would like to impact. For example, the focus is on primary education. Focus is also on holistic development of children. So not just a blind, of learning outcomes increasing in a few academic subjects. Also, I think educational inequality, that focus is quite distinctive, and identifying the factors that contribute to educational inequality, that sets the foundation apart quite a bit from other organizations. And the specific geographies that have been identified, at least for educational inequality, also kind of ensure that the foundation's grant-making is focused on, low and middle-income countries and specific geographies so that some impact can be seen over time. So I think these are good things.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much. And if we think about the Julius Baer Foundation, but maybe also just other foundations and governments or other NGOs, how do you feel they should be approaching the holistic solutions that you had mentioned earlier to education for children? What else should we be doing or thinking about as funders in this education space?
Yeah, Laura, I just there's been a challenge there. I actually addressed this question not appropriately earlier. So if that can be edited, I mentioned about how holistic solutions focus just on academic, socio-emotional learning, those are important.
Yes. Yeah.
So if the editing team is able to do that, or I could say that again. Is that okay?
Just say it again. Go ahead and say it again, okay. And then we'll sort it out afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you want me to ask that question again? Okay.
No, it's fine.
Go ahead.
Yeah. As you said, it's important to have holistic solutions for primary education. And a lot of interventions that governments and NGOs implement today are focused narrowly on improving learning in academic subjects. So it's very important to look at all-round development of children so that they realize their full potential. And programs should then focus on not just academic learning, but also socio-emotional learning, physical development, arts, crafts, and music, and all these domains of learning. And that is what a holistic solution for primary education should look like.
And what do you think should be the focus of your work going forward with the foundation in the coming years? What are your hopes that we can achieve together?
I'm quite new to this, but I'll still attempt. I think the foundation is attempting to review their overall strategy, both for wealth and educational inequality. and also focus on the interplay between these two domains, which we discussed are quite interrelated. So I hope to contribute to these strategic discussions and to arrive at a sharper focus of grant making, at least for educational inequality dimension. The other hope, and I'll be quite candid here, is that
yes.
Julius Baer Foundation is able to enhance the total quantum of grants that they are able to disburse every year and sort of reach 5 million Swiss francs in the short term and maybe 10 million the next 4 or 5 years. That's very important because that will give the foundation a lot of leverage to be supporting good work across several countries.
I knew you were a great asset to our work, dear. I completely agree with you. Thank you so much. I look forward to embarking on this journey with you in the months and years to come. Thank you so much for your support and for all of your contributions today and throughout our work.
Thank you, Laura. It's been a great conversation. Thank you. I hope to be seeing you soon.
See you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Inequality Initiative podcast. How did you find this episode? Please go to www.wealth-inequality.net to share your thoughts and comments and for more insights into the topic of wealth inequality.